Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, man.
Matt, it's my pleasure. I am starting to get more spiritual in my old age, and when the guest is ready, they appear. And, you know, little to my knowledge in that I hadn't prompted it, but I got a DM from you on NOS to be like, hey, Jake, fancy doing a podcast? And so here we are. And I'd been thinking about you. I was like, oh, I've got to get Paul on the podcast. So here we are. And what I want to do is the first question is, what are you working on at the moment, which you are most excited about?
Well, that's cool that it worked out that way. And yeah, just all things primal. I go to bed. It's actually insane.
Wow.
I think about primal all day and night, and I wake up and I'm like having dreams about it. So it's like a blessing and a curse. Like, I mean, it's a blessing. And like, I'm so stoked to be working on such what I think is an important mission.
Mm.
But it's just a testament to like choose your battles, right?
Yes.
Your job's going to go to bed with you every night.
Yes, of course. And so what is it that gets you so excited about working on something like Primal?
Yeah, it's just social media is such a tool, but it's become like just this dopamine slot machine, like addiction machine. And it's kind of not as much a tool anymore as it used to be and as it, I think it could be. So I think it's, fixing social media is a big mission. I don't know if Primal's doing that right now, but it's an attempt to do that in the grand scheme of things. So I'm stoked to be working on it.
And so perhaps paint a picture. I mean, you've frankly been living under a rock if you haven't used social media. But for you personally, Paul, what were some of the problems that you were finding you had? I.e., like, how are you feeling? Or did you get deplatformed? Or what was your own personal experience with social media that got you so frustrated with it in the first place?
Well, a couple things. I started working for Paul Saladino right after he got banned for talking about COVID on Instagram.
Interesting.
So wow. There's a little bit of a rugging there close by to me. And then the original piece that sold me about Noster was that original division of one ID for multiple apps.
Yes.
So one identity. You know, because when I was working for Paul, we would start like a new YouTube channel and we'd start on Twitter. And it's just like crazy that you'd have to post in all these different places
and
restart on each different platform. So that was kind of the original thing that sold me on Noster. And just the fact that you can't be deplatformed is very powerful. It solves for, censorship resistance and whatnot.
And sorry, so Paul, so when you went to work for Paul Saladino, you were working for him as like his head of content or something, or what was the specific role you were fulfilling there?
Yeah, pretty much just kind of hands on a lot of stuff. I was did some of the editing. I would do some of the posting, head of content, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, I'm fascinated by that. And if you're interested in health and wellness, you can't not have heard about the carnivore diet. And if you have heard about it, Paul Saladino is has been one of the leading characters to promote that over the last however many years. It's fascinating when you get someone with deep expertise that then combines it with the ability to create content. So not to take away from your own story, but working for someone like Paul Saladino must have been pretty interesting place to sit. It's like, okay, here's this person that's really cutting edge at what they do, but they're utilizing digital tools to amplify that. So like, talk me through how they actually did that.
Yeah, so Paul was interesting because he had a bit of a podcast base before going into the short form circus. So I think that's what made his message kind of amplify quick, was that he could actually talk about it in long form.
Yes.
So he had like this already deep relationship with people before he went to like the short form platforms. And it is the ability to just riff and to just produce content over and over and over again, just like, you know, a machine, and being part of that machine and having a little bit of, you know, exposure to that, what it takes to really propel your message to the center stage of the world. Like, yeah, everybody knows about him now. It's insane. Mm. And also one little piece too that kind of makes me think a lot is a lot of our conversations did end up steering towards how do we create for an algorithm. And it literally affects us, because it's the bottom line of the business. What's the goal? Why are you on these platforms? It is to just gain attention for the most part, or for for the business part, business side mm-hmm. of it. And how do you do that? You play the algorithm. So what do? You do stuff to get attention. And I wonder if that's what's going to be the same game if we're on an Oster standard or not.
Yeah, it's a great question, isn't it? I mean, personally, I've played around with content in a fairly serious way now for probably 5 years, maybe more actually. Like I was posting on Twitter in 2017. Oh, it's been a while now, but it's interesting because certain platforms feel better for certain people, whether you want to speak or you want to write or you want to just post photographs, whatever the case might be, there's something for you out there. But I completely agree with you. The moment that I had created first of all, it's like Bitcoiners are interesting in themselves. And they're now banging on about this thing, Oster. Well, I'm going to take a look. Like, I have to take a look because I respect the people that are talking about it. And initially, I'm like, this is the crappiest experience I've ever had online. You know, it's like everything didn't really have, the newsfeed didn't really work. And you've got to put these keys in. And it's like, hang on, so there's a client and there's relays. But like completely got what you mean by like the idea of being deplatformed. And I, as a podcaster over the last few years, tiny audience compared to, you know, the major podcasts, of course. So I'm going to be, you know, last to be rug pulled after all of those kind of people. But it's very real how the social media businesses were used, in particular around the COVID era, for pushing Big Pharma's agenda. And it's so obvious that you're the product, not the customer. It's like, okay, so why am I being pushed all this information? It's like, because the guy paying for the adverts actually controls this merry-go-round of kind of madness. And not being deplatformed was such a big purpose behind Oster for me to just keep exploring. It's like, okay, I don't care if it's buggy. What does it actually do? Why would it be important? And obviously, here we are now, and you're literally living and breathing Primal. So a lot of that resonates with me very strongly. A Oster standard, that's a great phrase as well. What does that mean to you, do you reckon, Paul?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, because I obviously have big dreams for what Primal could be. And and I could picture a world where we're all on this, you know, we're all holding our own keys and whatnot. But it's probably going to start out as just a small group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be other people in Web3 land. There's going to be other people in just, you know, legacy social media land. But yeah, so I do like the picture. What is the world like with if we're all on the same protocol and having the opportunity to turn off and on algorithms? It just would be so much of a healthier space. But then does it just become this short form thing? Because a lot of it is the algorithm that makes us so addicted to the phone, but it's also the the actual phone and the vertical scrolling that's so easy to, and then like the flickering blue light and all the colors that are jumping at you. It's so easy.
Because even Gmail is designed to be addictive.
Yeah. And the lights and the flashes and the little berries, notifications. Yeah. So I wonder how much healthier it would actually be. Cause I like to think of Primal as like a healthy, organic, grass fed social media. Whereas like, TikTok is just seed oil slop, just trying to addict you and, you know, fatten you up. But
it's a great point.
I guess it's just the agency and the control you get over the network that's like the change that we all want to see and be a part of.
Okay. And so let's dive into that. When you say agency over the network, what do you mean?
Just the ability. So like, for example, I have Instagram still. Mm-hmm. I unfollowed everybody because I figured it was on brand / I just don't want to spend as much time there anymore.
Yeah.
But like, I will spend more time now because I can't turn the algorithm off. I don't follow anybody, so I just get hit straight for you page. And now all I see is baseball, surfing, and the occasional chick. I'm like, what is going on? You know? So just like if I was able to view Instagram through Primal, I would have all these feeds. I'd have my close friends feed. I'd turn on the crack algorithm there. I'd have a surf algorithm there, baseball there. And just like that control would be awesome. But it just goes against their business model. So I don't think they're incentivized to do that.
Yes. It's very interesting when you look at incentives. There's not really much incentive for the traditional social media players to include Oster. But that's where like disruptive technology is so interesting. It's like, okay, but there's a hell of a lot of people that use those products that are currently exposed to what I would deem like extremely high counterparty risk in that you are operating on someone else's digital real estate. And you might think that you're not. It's my Instagram account, or it's my Twitter account, or it's my YouTube channel. But like, I mean, every week I see some post from someone saying, so-and-so got deplatformed, you know, at YouTube, get them back in.
It's engagement bait out there.
Well, yeah, ironically posted on Twitter and, you know. And I always respond as well, come on YouTube. So I wonder whether or not the traditional businesses will ever include it somehow. But maybe that doesn't matter so much because I, as a user, like at least from what I'm doing currently, Paul, the podcast content that I create, I feel like it's still important to leverage it as much as possible. So why wouldn't I post it in as many places as possible? But I'm currently with a team of people chopping up long form, creating graphics, creating short videos, creating audiograms and pumping them across like, I don't know how many platforms it is, like 6 or 7 different places. It's a lot of work. It's ridiculous.
Do you guys use like a Hootsuite or anything like that? Or do you go manually?
No, not at the moment. No, Michael does a lot of the legwork, my producer, putting stuff out there. And most of them have a native scheduler in them. So like a Twitter, for example, and a YouTube, you can publish all the long form stuff at the same time. And I have played around with a platform like Buffer before, which does a similar job, right? But I mean, this is where Primal Studio, we should definitely talk about. It's interesting because you mentioned the algorithm. Like, I feel like it can tell when a human presses send and when Buffer sends it, you know?
Yeah, when I used to work for Saladino, like, we would never do the other things because we felt that exact really? Same thing. Yeah, so we literally spend time in each app. And I just felt like every time I'd post, like, my HP for the day would just go down, 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 and down. But yeah, I guess the dream for every content creator would be just the one post to every different platform. And that begs the question, why isn't it just one identity? And I think there's something like just so much deeper going on when you really think about it and see it. Like right now, we're just trapped in each box, Meta's box, YouTube's box, X's box, and we're just talking amongst each other in there and there and there. Whereas Nostr, you're just actually free and you're posting things that you own and digitally sign wherever you want and hosting it wherever you want. I think there's something like so much deeper going on there that I'm excited to figure out like what Nostr actually is going to be and how it's going to take off. Because right now there's so many different ways for it to potentially take off. Maybe it's Primal, maybe it's Salanus, maybe it's White Noise, maybe it's something we don't even know, like some vibe coded game that makes it explode. There's so much potential.
So much potential. And I'm toying with the idea, Paul, of being, I haven't yet done this, but I could easily become a Nostr first podcast where everything that I post goes on Nostr for 24 hours before it goes anywhere else. That would be quite straightforward to action. But a Nostr only, for some reason, I'm a bit like, I'm not sure if I could do that. Given the like analytics I've generated over the last 6 months, the vast majority of the exposure has been from traditional. But it's like no one's really looking. And I don't have to monetize this podcast yet. What do you stand for, Jake? You know, do you stand for freedom? Do you stand for autonomy? Do you stand for the ability for a user to own their own data? And it's like, yes, yes, and yes. So like, as we're talking right now, it's almost like, let's fucking do it. You know,
I have the same like predicament in my head, you know, like I kind of want to go Nostr only, but I literally can't because I'm like the advertising machine, like the mascot. But Nostr first is a great start. I post everything to Nostr first before I ship it to my, avenues, and that feels good because we can't all be Odell and Gigi and Pablo. Like sometimes I miss them fighting on Twitter, but it's just also much better for your mental health, like to not be on those other platforms.
Well, and that's a great point about this as well, which is I definitely feel different using Nostr regularly versus when I used to use Twitter a lot. And I mean, it's not. again, like people much bigger platforms. I had a Twitter profile that I started again this year because I was like, I'm going to start the podcast from scratch and all of it, every profile, I'm going to start from zero and just see what happens. Except for Nostra, actually. Nostra wasn't just the, I had a key pair from before, but I had about 8,000 Twitter followers. And at one point I was trialing different tactics where I would actually use a scheduler. I can't remember which one at the time. And I was firing out like, I don't know, 20, 30 tweets a day. Sometimes I get like a million impressions, just a bloke with a keyboard. And it was mad. But like some of the comments I would get underneath a tweet, I'd like get thousands of comments. And you're like trying to reply to them all, trying to like them. And it just, it was completely and utterly like, I got completely burnt out by it. So I'd go through these phases of like doing it a lot. I'd see like a Pompliano tweet being like, let's get after it relentlessly today. You're like, yeah. How many times has that guy automatically sent that fucking tweet? But, you know, at the same time, come on. So I'm there like, you know, and it's quite incredible how much reach you can get with just some time and a keyboard. But at the same time, it was unsustainable for me because I would just get exhausted by how intense the feedback was. It's like, whoa, okay, do I need to do that?
It's definitely evolutionarily inappropriate.
Yes.
Social media in general is completely evolutionarily inappropriate. It's so much stimulus for one little monkey brain to handle. Like, how would we project to, I mean, what is the number? The Dunbar, is it the Dunbar number? Like 150 people?
Yeah, that's normally what you would know in your social circles, 150, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're talking to thousands of people, millions of people a month.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to handle that?
No, you can't. And some of them are robots and some of them are anonymous with funny pictures and just, you know, it's... what really hit me recently about Nostra, actually, Paul, which was cool, is this idea that when you are using... this is, anyone can bring this to mind, right? You sign up for Facebook. It's like, okay, I'd like your email, I'd like your password. Okay, great. Or Instagram, same, email, password, or Twitter, email, password. And that step is basically you asking permission to enter their fiefdom. And you are then part of the centralized system in which they control the narrative such that, yes, it says you're deleting something, but that information is still stored on someone else's server somewhere. So in some ways, it's a bit of a mirage as to like your own personal freedom within their digital monopoly. But what Nostra is, identity at a protocol layer. And so when you spin up your NPUB and NSEC, you're actually communicating with a base layer of software that's not controlled by a private company. And people don't understand what that means yet. And so Bitcoin is value at the protocol layer and Nostra is identity at the protocol layer and not a CBDC style, ooh, if you welcome yourself into my empire, I'll let you, you know, eat the bugs and turn your money off if you misbehave. But actually a way of communicating online such that the identification of the person sending the information is controlled at the base layer. Why is that such a big deal? And yeah, take it from there.
I mean, I like to just zoom way out.
Sure.
If you were like an alien, I think Safe likes to make this analogy, like looking down at how the world's money, how what humans think of as money, you would just laugh. And then I think the same for social media and communication on the web. These aliens would look down at us and like, look at these guys. In order for them to communicate with each other, they got to go through these massive corporations that don't have their best interests in mind, that can tweak the narrative, that can control everything.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, like spin up the rage bait. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's just going to take like a leap in consciousness or education, what it is that's going to make people want to take more control and have more sovereignty over their digital lives. It is very scary at first, obviously. And it's just going to take time and more me and you type nerds just getting out there and
and getting preaching. Into it.
And it's going to take more shit happening in the legacy world as well. That, and maybe these central points of failure are going to fail.
That's a good way of looking at it.
It's going to be a lot.
So people like you and I are a, what's the right way of saying it? It's power like headwind, user. Headwinds and tailwinds. And a tailwind essentially is like people forging forwards regardless of what else is going on because they think it's important, which is what we're doing here. It's like this thing is clearly very important. But a headwind being the opposite to that. I'm actually confusing myself here by making those 2 points. Let's do this. Where in the legacy world do you think we'll continue to see Nostr being organically advertised?
That's a good question. My original thesis has always been we have to have more fun.
Mm.
So what does that mean as people that, as a, someone that's building this tool, what does that actually mean? I mean, you and I see your zaps everywhere. For some reason, yeah. it does just feel so good to send it to other people. I don't know what it is. I mean, it's fun. But yeah, that's my, I don't know what it is. Like, obviously, I go to bed thinking about this every day. How are we going to get the masses over here? I mean, it's very cool that we have a bunch of Bitcoiners on the protocol, and Bitcoiners, more people are listening to us. We pretty much swung an election, if you ask me. And I think we're right about Nostr as well. So,
What I was trying to tease out was every day you'll see some kind of headline somewhere of a piece of government overreach where they'll be saying, oh, by the way, this person was naughty. We're going to put in place this law, or this company misbehaved, and therefore this regulation is going to come in and like save the day. And you know, for example, like there was that headline about Brazil banning Twitter for whatever reason. That's kind of what I was trying to get to with that headwind tailwind concept. It's like there's going to be people deplatformed elsewhere all the time, and that is only going to pick up pace, right?
Yeah. And I think so. It depends. I mean, the last election and whatnot, it seems like we're trending in the right way for some countries.
Yeah.
For others, looks like we're going the wrong way. So it is just a matter of the builders of these products like Nostr. And I think this is something we haven't done a great job of yet, is to create tools for people like me and you, these power users. That are able to help onboard their communities rapidly and get them off these legacy platforms.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why Nostr First is perhaps a more suitable approach to the content creation side of things. Because, you know, when I have an RSS feed pumping out podcast episodes to iTunes and to Spotify, if someone starts listening, and I could easily do this, I haven't yet, but insert some kind of prompt being like, you know, switch over to Fountain and send us some boosts, or you know, I like to use a value for value model, check us out on Nostr where we post things first and send us a zap. And it's interesting because I feel like I've really tried to focus on just creating the content so far, but actually a lot of what makes that valuable is guiding your audience. And I haven't done this enough. And like, by the way, guys, if you're enjoying this, do this. And often I will, when I'm listening to other people's stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, good idea, you know, and you follow the prompt. So I could do that more. And I think, you know, you could have in your Twitter bio, for example, like I spend time on Nostr where I speak freely, you know, come here. So we could all do a better job of that. I think where I was trying to get to is that, in my strong opinion, the digital world is making it more and more difficult, and it's trending harder for people to say what they feel online. And yes, the recent election might have been a small respite to that. But, you know, I look at Australia, where I've spent a lot of time the last 5 years, recently become a citizen. And they're talking about bringing in stupid rules around how many times a teenager can go online. And it's just very obvious. And to Canada, another place for sure, the UK, where I grew up, they're getting more and more authoritarian and getting further and further left. And the only way that that ends up going is making people censor online more and more and more. And as that happens, Nostr becomes more and more obvious.
Yeah. I mean, after being there for a while, it feels so obvious. It almost, you can't say the should word, but it feels like social media should have always been this way. Maybe it's just because the tech wasn't there, you know, when these tools were being built. And the other thing is a couple things. Like, we are evolving now with social media. It's a critical way of how we spread information and communicate in our day-to-day lives. But it's been such a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. So that's just, there's an experiment. They're going to just cut people off. We'll see how that works. Probably won't. And that's definitely an advertisement for an Oster. And then I guess something deeper too is we just need to figure out as these smart monkeys how to communicate with each other online.
Yes.
Because
it's so obviously broken when you really think about it.
Yeah, it's so obviously broken because these algorithms and whatnot, they promote fear, rage, and hate and yelling.
Yeah. And the reason they do that is because that's the easiest way to keep your attention for longer, which means they can make more dollars from the adverts. And that incentive model isn't going to change. It's actually really interesting. I saw it's a very famous clip of Joe Rogan talking about a potential for podcasts, and it's him drinking a beer with one of his buddies who's a comedian. I can't remember how. It's literally like 10 years ago this now, maybe more. And it's like the thing that this potentially solves is that media is broken because it's selling adverts, whereas you can just sit online and drink beer and talk about what the fuck you want for as long as you like. We just have to figure out how to make money out of it. And it's like, wow, that was like 15, 20 years ago, maybe he was talking about that. And the ad business caught up, basically, for the general internet user. Whereas maybe this is different with Oster.
Maybe, because we have money built right in.
Yeah. And so, Paul, so tell me, so as you're building a product like Primal, let's spend a little time talking about Primal Studio. And so for me, currently, what had been really interesting, actually, and this is why I like playing around with something like Oster and just testing new things, I hadn't understood in my naivety that when I put a picture or a video onto a social media platform, it's actually a piece of data that has to be stored somewhere. And so to make a post on Oster, I had to spin up another platform essentially, and I used Oster.build. And ended up sending sats natively, which I fucking love, because it's like, here's the invoice, here's the sats, boom, and it's just done. There's no like wanking around with a credit card and sending something via Stripe. It's literally Bitcoin built in at the core. It's incredible. But then it's like, now you've got to upload the content to Oster.build and then you share it to Oster. It's like, this is essentially what Twitter, Instagram, etc. are doing for you, but on the back end. And hence, like in some ways, you're the product because it's not free to have a profile. They are covering that cost, but in exchange for your attention. Oster.build has been fascinating. I've been in touch with Fishcake a bit, the developer who's built it. Shout out to them, who has been able to incorporate some analytics recently. And so I have hit 22 or 25,000 unique clean hits in the last 6 months with my Oster content. And the fascinating thing about that is that's about half the amount of views I got on YouTube and half the amount of Twitter. But if you think there's a billion users on YouTube and there's like 50,000 a day on Oster, as a percentage of the traffic, like a hell of a lot of people that are using Oster are seeing my content as a percentage of total eyeballs, which is wild. And then it's like, if you could somehow keep that percentage over time as it grows, you would create something extremely valuable. And that would be the goal. One thing that Oster.build doesn't do is schedule, for example. And I've been looking at Primal Studio. I was like, maybe I could switch across. And it basically does the same thing, right? You want to become a super user of Primal. And I haven't yet made the switch. But chat me through the genesis for creating that product and the kind of customer that have signed up for it so far and really why you guys built it.
So, we want to make Oster like a world-class place for creators. And of course, it's obvious that we need to schedule posts, and we also want businesses to join Oster as well.
Yeah.
And the problem with businesses joining Oster is that you don't want to share your private key to the intern.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So now the intern can spin up a bunch of posts for you, and all you have to go do after it's spun up is just press click, 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 click. After you can approve everything.
Yeah. Nice.
So the people that have adopted it so far are mostly probably writers, long form content.
Yep.
To the scheduling and people that post frequently. And it's just V1. Mm. So like this is just the bare minimum of tools that we could put into it so far. And like we're going to expand it to videos, much more tools for creators to make this place like an actual, you know, legit competitor.
And so it doesn't do video at the moment then?
No. Like you can schedule your videos on there actually, yeah.
But you can.
It's not like a YouTube studio type thing. Like it's not optimized for bigger videos yet, like long form videos.
Well, and I think that's what was cool about seeing it launched is, I mean, when I started playing with Nosta 2 years ago in a serious way, I was like, where's the buffer of Nosta? Like it needs to be there and someone will build it. And then lo and behold, along it comes and you're like, okay, cool. And you start to see the green shoots of like what this thing might be one day. And there'll be tons of businesses similar to Primal building stuff for people to use Nosta. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever. And so have you guys been pleased with the feedback from the market so far as to how that product's been taken up?
Yeah, I want more people to check it out. Everybody can check it out for
Sure. I absolutely encourage people to do that. Yeah. Yes, please.
But also, yeah, it's not for everybody yet. Like not everybody's hardcore using Nosta to advertise or as like a real platform that they're taking very seriously, which is fine. It'll come eventually. And also there's a couple tools that I'm still waiting to tweak. We're still waiting to tweak just a little bit that'll make importing content from the other platforms seamless. So I don't know if you knew that you can just import content from Substack, Medium, Ghost with like,
well, I saw clicks. That advertised. Yeah. That looks absolutely epic.
And that's going to be absolutely epic. I mean, it is working today. You can import like up to three of your Substack articles, your three latest. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm kind of waiting for me to personally like go reach out to a bunch of people and bug them about coming over to Primal.
Yeah. But also the cool thing there, well, two things. From my selfish perspective, one of the areas that I want to start building in is long form written. Like I like writing as well. I just haven't done it because I haven't had a lot of time to do it. But it's still the case for me that I would see my website as my primary piece of real estate online that I kind of control and I'm completely I'm able to edit it and design it and brand it however I want. And what I would see myself doing is some kind of, and it's built on WordPress, some kind of email newsletter blog tool that would publish an article on the website, send it as an email to an email list, and also send it as a long form article on Nosta. And so my website, and even one day I might even host my own RSS feeds for the audio from there. Like you could go right down the rabbit hole, you could have a Start9, have your own server and all that kind of shit. But that's for another day for sure. At the moment, my primary focus is just, you know, having conversations and getting them out there. And actually Fountain themselves have a pretty cool new product that they're building to host audio for people as well, which I'll definitely look at. But that's where I was thinking, when I saw Primal Studio, I was like, oh my God, cool. There's the bridge to Nosta from your website and email letter. I think maybe the thing to just dwell on for a moment then is like the Nosta protocol is a communication layer that is interacted with by these key pairs. And because of the nature of how it's built, there's a sense of trust that is far higher with the information that you can see. We can create our own algorithms to sift through the Nosta content to get what we want. So if you want just the short form tweet style stuff, you get that. If you want the long forms, you get that. And the Primal app kind of does this already with the long reads and whatever. But is that how you see the future of browsing Nosta, where it's like, okay, I want to just see short form video and your client will show you that? Or will you have different clients for each type of content, do you think?
That's a great question. I don't know, maybe. Because like we had Ola spin up and it was like the Instagram style, kind of Instagram TikTok-esque Nosta app. But I know it's not getting as developed right now. I wonder if it'll just want to go all to one. There's going to be like a winner take all, like the everything app of Nosta that gets, you know, the most market share for the social media use case. Because that kind of makes more sense to me. But because I already have, you can already set up feeds like that within Primal.
Mm.
But yeah, time will tell.
yeah, maybe I need to have a bit more of a play around with the advanced search function to actually do that.
Not enough power users even know about the advanced search.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
It's really crazy. And
speaking of power user, I'd like to go back to, and it's fun describing oneself as that in a way, isn't it? Power user is, so I have my Zap settings set to 1,000 sats that over the last how many months has sometimes been a dollar, sometimes been a $1.20, sometimes been 80 cents or whatever. And what's fun is you can obviously, you can personalize the Zap message. And I've just put the Jake Woodhouse podcast in my Zap setting. And what I've been doing, like one of the selfish reasons for it is like, it's just a good way of promoting my podcast. So if I zap a note and the biggest zap volume is 1,000 sats from Jake, and it pops up everywhere. And if I do 10 zaps a day, it's $10. And it's like, is that expensive advertising? Well, I'm not necessarily running analytics on it, but I don't think so. And I also just love the fact that it's literally a micropayment of the hardest money man's ever known.
Isn't like, it yeah, the most
have a fucking zap.
It's the most wholesome loop out there.
Yes.
It's amazing. Like, because I always say that zaps are the easiest way into somebody's subconscious.
Okay.
And I fully believe that. Like, if you zap me, I'm looking at your profile.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, if you like a post on Instagram, I don't really care. But if you zap me money, like, who are you? Why did you do that? I mean, and some people might think that is being a little cheap, just like transactional. But no, it's what it is.
No, well, it's because it's a gift. It's an actual exchange of value.
Mm-hmm.
Like what's a like on Instagram means nothing. Whereas it's like, oh, there's someone like throwing some zaps around. Who are they?
And it is, oh man, we felt it so much. Like Laura and I, we posted our little gender reveal video on Instagram after we posted it on Primal.
Yep.
And we end up getting like over $1,000 worth of Bitcoin.
You're kidding me.
No, from Primal, from Noster. And then like these Instagram, we had like over 1,000 likes, but it's like,
wow,
you know,
yeah, wow,
you just feel it so much more on Noster. It's so cool.
And speaking of which, I did see a post you did, and I don't think it was the gender reveal one. So sorry, you guys are having a boy or a girl?
We're having a baby girl in like a month.
Oh my god, exciting! And sorry, remind me what your missus's name is.
Her name's Laura.
Laura, that's right, because I met you guys at Bitcoin Bali, and I think you since got married. It's always so fun when you meet people in person and then you start following them online and you just see all the progress people make. And in particular, I think like the Bitcoin plays a big part in this because people's lives are radically improving and they're talking about it online, not in the like, look at me, I'm amazing, but it's like, yeah, we feel great and this is what we've been up to. You're like, epic, have a zap, you know, that's fucking awesome. And so it's just been awesome. Okay, so you guys got married and about to have a little baby girl. That's fantastic, mate. Exciting for you.
I wasn't even working. I just kind of showed up to Bali and then Japan for Noster just because it was an excuse to travel and see the world.
Yep.
My soon-to-be wife.
Yep.
And now it's like I'm working full-time on Noster and Bitcoin is, of course, yeah, it's so cool.
And so I wanted this actually to come up. So, yeah, well, say hi to Laura for me. You guys live in Costa Rica?
Yeah.
Awesome. So just talk me through what life is like there. I've been, as I touched on earlier, so lived in Australia the last 5 years. We've had three kids very quickly. So we have a 5-year-old, almost 3-year-old, almost 1-year-old. And
any more on the pipeline?
I would say the shop is shut. Yeah. So my wife's turning 39 very soon. And for us, it's like we're done. Even though like 4 would be awesome. But for now, yeah, we're very happy with 3. But starting to feel like we could go anywhere. We're currently on a trip, the first time we've done a big trip in years. And Costa Rica is a place I'd love to know more about. So as a couple, just about to have their first kid, like why are you guys living in Costa Rica?
A lot of reasons. And I'm curious to come back and pick your brain because I think
please
you're living my... Well, I don't know what's going to happen when we have a baby. Like, I want to travel still. And anyways, I'll answer your question first. It's an awesome life out here. There's trade-offs, of course. but I love the set of trade-offs. My frame, when I drove down here back in 2021 from California, mm-hmm. and I didn't really have much going on for my life, but I came to the conclusion after philosophizing heavily in all the podcasts and books that I was listening to on the way down that, man, if I was a billionaire, I would wake up and surf warm water waves every single morning of my life. So I just like, all right, that's the North Star. That's what I want to do. That's what I can't stand not doing. And that's what Costa Rica I found here. I found that I could surf warm water waves every morning with cool people, and started in one place in Costa Rica, then ended up in another place when my boss then was Saladino, and he moved to another place, and it happened to be Bitcoin Jungle. And I'm like, oh, now I get to live my Bitcoin thesis at work. And then the Noster conference happened to be here in Uvita. The first Noster conference, I was like, yeah, I'll go to that. But it's cool. It's a really wholesome life. Like, wake up early with the sun, I go surf, and then we get the food from the farmers markets, pay it all with Bitcoin. Got a good little squad of friends here, and then there's quite a few Bitcoiners, there's quite a few Bitcoin tourists as well that come through. This area in particular, you need a car and you got to drive around a little bit, but there is kind of like a cool expat community. There's a cool little babies community, you know, kid community.
Yeah, which you need 100%.
Yeah, so we're pretty, you know, I'm just renting. Like, I'm not planning on buying anything anytime soon. Too orange build for that, but yeah, we're light, but we're gonna keep coming back here, and it's cool to keep coming back to one place and seeing friendships compound and opportunities compound and whatnot.
And Paul, sorry, are you able to say? Are you? Yeah, that's the big part of it. whereabouts in Costa Rica are you? Sorry.
Yeah, so Uvita, Dominical area.
Okay.
That's where the Bitcoin jungle is.
Okay.
It's south.
Cool.
On the Pacific side.
Well, I've lived in Byron Bay for the last year and a half, which is one of Australia's most famous surfing spots.
Yeah.
And I took like 3 or 4 lessons. And you know, there's that phrase, like, you can do anything, you can't be good at everything. And I watched like rip surfer dudes cruise past me every day. I'm like, fuck, I've got to learn how to surf. Fuck, I've got to learn how to surf. And if I lived in Costa Rica anywhere near you, I'd have the same problem. Maybe I would, you know? You just be like, no, take a year, just figure it out. Well, yeah, obviously that's the problem. It just, the lessons that I took, I just reminded me, it's like, I'm just going to eat salt water for a long time before I even get half good. And I just couldn't be fucked. I'm like, I've got 3 kids. That's enough for me to deal with at the moment. I'll go to the gym instead. But yeah, so good luck with the baby. It's a wild ride, mate. Like, honestly, maybe we'll do a pod in 6 months' time, but all of the cliche stuff that people say about becoming parents is true. Like, everything suddenly means so much more. You understand why you've come to the world. But I won't put those words in your mouth until it's actually happened. So best of luck with the last like 4 weeks or so, because yeah, the missus will get more and more uncomfortable, and it's like, oh my God, we're going to suddenly do a baby and stuff. But we actually had 3 home births, which I always encourage people to do if you have the capacity to do it. You do. Yes, mate. Go for it. Completely possible. The female body's done it a gazillion times, and you know, she'll smash it. Yeah. Gosh, exciting. And have you got some people that are helping out with that from the local area?
We'll have a doula, and then we'll have a doctor on standby as well.
Great.
Yeah, I'm freaking like terrified but ready, but you know, I'm stoked.
Well, I always tell this story where, I don't always say it, but to share a story, the first baby that we had, home birth, Lauren's labor was 17 or 18 hours or something crazy. And it was about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, having it started at midnight the night before, and just nothing was really working. And my one job was to pack the hospital suitcase. And we did something similar. This was in Australia, in Melbourne, where it was called shared care. So we had private midwives at our house, but we also had a contract with a obstetrician in the hospital locally if we needed to go there for any emergency. And it was like, suddenly the decision was made, this labor's not going where it should be going, we're now getting worried because Lauren's getting so tired, we're going to go to the hospital. So what was so weird, it's almost a spiritual thing, but there was 2 midwives there. Midwife number 1 went to go and get her phone, went to next door, started calling the hospital, organizing all of that. I left the room to go and get the hospital bag to realize I hadn't fucking packed it. So I'm like rushing around the house, getting all this stuff, packing it completely wrong. The dog hadn't been for a piss for like half a day. So I'm on the street. And this like this moment, I've been so confident we were going to have a home birth. And I suddenly had this moment on the street, it's kind of drizzling with the dog, like, shit, home birth or childbirth, it's really dangerous. Like, fuck. You know, there's a baby not even halfway out of my missus next door, and this isn't working. What's going to happen? I got really anxious and came back inside. And literally as I came back in, the final process kicked off. And what had happened, we think, is that Lauren didn't trust the midwife number one for some reason. And midwife number two, as soon as she stepped into the primary role in the bedroom, the body just completely gave way to the process, and the baby was born within like 45 minutes. And I do wonder if it was me, the masculine energy leaving the room, and equally the feminine energy that was out of place with midwife one, number one, leaving the room. And then Lauren was able to like really just fucking let rip, and the baby was then born. But yeah, it's standing on the street in the drizzle, being like, I haven't got the hospital bag packed, the dog's here, the baby's not born, like, fuck, what have I done?
Yeah. That's one of my jobs, is to make that bag.
Well, Paul, get it done, mate.
That's an interesting note. It's good to know. No, what about, I'm curious about.
Yeah, please, fire away.
Did you guys always have a house in Byron, or were you renting? Like, and then did you guys travel a lot when you had 1-year-old, 3-year-old, now you have a 5-year-old? How was that?
So I moved to Australia at the very end of 2019. My wife and I'm English, she's Australian. We were living in London up to like in 2019, just got married, decided to go and live in Australia for a bit, and decide, do we prefer living in Melbourne or do we decide to prefer to live in London? And my first daughter, Ruby, was born in July of 2020. And that was the like absolutely wild COVID lockdown period. Right. Yeah. So Melbourne had become this like extraordinary like police state, and we were under a form of house arrest a year later, where it's like, if you don't take the jab, then you can't go and do anything, and we're going to fucking chase you out of town. And that's when it got like super crazy. But year number one of Ruby's life was like, you know, there was no mother's group. We decided to have home births because we were so fed up with the hospital being like, you can come, you can't come. Maybe you'll have to get vaccinated, maybe you won't. It's like, we actually have to do this ourselves, because dealing with these hospitals in this environment is just so painful. And that was one of the things that pushed us down that route, actually, interestingly. My second daughter was born 2 years after that, so September of 2022. So really the first like 2.5 years of living in Melbourne was under some form of lockdown, which was an extraordinary experience. Like, central Melbourne was a horrible place to be. And I don't recommend ever going back to that lifestyle. And that's one of the reasons we actually decided to sell our house, buy Bitcoin instead, move into rental properties to be more flexible. And like, I swore to myself, I'm never, ever, ever again getting into that kind of situation where I'm so dependent on someone else. Where like, I didn't know where my food was coming from, didn't know where my water was coming from. I had most of my money in physical real estate. I thought I owned it. But it turns out that actually the government can do whatever the fuck they want. And it really means nothing if you're in a large urban area and you've got 200 square meters of property that you think is yours. Yeah. It doesn't make any difference. And then baby number three was born in Byron in September last year, Alfie, little boy. So we've got two girls and a boy. And for basically 6 years, Loz has been either pregnant or breastfeeding. We did one big trip to the UK 2 years ago. And we're now on a big trip to the States and Mexico and back to Melbourne. But I would say that it's only now that we're starting to really think about being more mobile. And it's very natural, the pregnancy process and having a newborn, you feel very much more attached to the idea of being somewhere specific and physical, and like hibernating, essentially, just caring for this thing. And we're just coming out the other side of that. And we absolutely plan on being a family that's very, very mobile and traveling a lot. And I mean, even a question I'm trying to ask myself at the moment is, if you could live anywhere and your wealth strategy is almost entirely a digital one, driven largely by Bitcoin, and you can still invest in companies like Atlantis, for example, who are doing their crowdfund at the moment, anywhere in the world, you could be set. I could be your next door neighbor and still get access to those deals and still own as much Bitcoin. But I wouldn't have to pay the Australian government or the British government or the US government 30, 40, 50% of my annual income or annual income from a capital gains perspective. And thus far, I haven't made any big decisions, but that would be one obvious one. It's like, can you justify living in a high tax economy when you're that mobile? I don't know the answer yet. We'll see. But I'm coming out the other end of a very intense 5-year period of a very small baby's pool.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's definitely my game plan. I mean,
do it, mate. Go for it.
Pump them out, I think. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. We're in the spot where we don't own anything except for that which is digital, and are able to move around. But I don't know where we'd really go. I'm pretty obsessed with the idea of having little communities around the world of cool Bitcoiners, and maybe even just like little citadels to visit or whatnot. And it's like, maybe I got to build the one for people to come down here to visit and stop through, you know, and have instant community right there. But yeah, I guess I'm also curious, before we run out of time, is like how you spend your day as a person that just had all those kids. And as your wife, like, I mean, because we're here on a podcast late, like, what do you do in the morning? Like, when do you run away? When do you come back to take care of the kids? That kind of stuff. Lock everything out to work? And yeah.
I guess it's easiest to explain this morning. So I woke up with my two daughters in bed and my wife had my son. But last night I started the night with my son and I in one room, and he woke up and I got him fed at about 11 p.m. and I couldn't get him to sleep till 1 a.m. And before 1 a.m., one of my daughters also woke up. So I was back in the bedroom with her, with the baby, trying to get her back to sleep. And I eventually got him to sleep at around 1, maybe 1:30. And I got some sleep from about 2 till 4 a.m. He woke up again. I take him back into my wife. And in between, one of the other daughters has woken up. So, I mean, overnight, it's like, it's an absolute shit show. You know, if you get like 4 or 5 hours sleep unbroken, you've killed it. And then in the daytime, well, because we're on holiday, we're in a hotel. It's like wake up, breakfast in the room, swim, maybe hit the gym. One of us will have the kids at any one time. And because I'm essentially working for myself. So I'm looking for investments as an investor. It's my own money that I'm investing. So if I decide to miss an investment because I'm doing something else, it's not the end of the world. And generally speaking, those deals take time. So it's pretty easy not to miss it. And the main investment I'm really making is in myself and building a podcast. So I'm doing, you know, 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there at a laptop, figuring out, you know, is this getting published? I've got two guys, Pat and Michael, shout out to them, working with me that help make the whole thing actually happen. So my job is really like scheduling guests, recording conversations, and then pretty much everything is then taken by them after that point. And I do the recordings at nighttime. So yeah, it's now 9 o'clock at night, and I can be fairly confident that between 8 and 9 p.m. the children are asleep, and therefore I'm not needed. But basically all day is children focused, and we will tag team each other looking after them. It depends where we are. Like right now, we're very much on a trip. But if we're in a bit more of a routine, somewhere specific, like when we're in Byron, we're renting a property there. And we had people come and help us. So we'd hire a nanny and they'd take the two girls off, and that would get you a couple of hours here and there. So if you're in Australia on the East Coast and you want to record a US guest, you need to do it in the morning. So I'd carve out, you know, 9 to 10 a.m. on a Thursday morning or a Tuesday morning. And basically, my wife and I are constantly kind of figuring out who's doing what when, and like when can you be online and not be online. And we want to follow a process of, I think it's literally unschooling rather than homeschooling is too grand. It's like we just basically just let them hang out at home. And I don't really intend on changing that till they're at least like 7 or 8 years old. So we've got a couple of years till that happens. So yeah, that's what a day kind of looks like, Paul.
All right. A lot of juggling around.
It is, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're lucky. We're going to have our parents come down right around birth time, right? Hopefully like right after. So we'll have some help there. Mm-hmm. And then it's just, yeah, I have no idea how the day is going to flow. I assume that your decision-making tech abilities must become faster.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You fire off a message, you fire up a post, it's like flows through you a little bit quicker because you're just...
Well, absolutely, mate. Because it's like, what's the right way of saying it? I have a mentor, shout out to Jason Parks, who I speak with weekly. Not currently because I'm on a trip, but he told me this awesome story once of, because I was getting really worked up about deep work. It's like, Jason, I can never get 3 hours to myself. He's like, Jake, fuck off, mate. Who gets 3 hours to themselves in the real world? You know, there's this book that I was reading called Deep Work. It was talking about all these incredible thinkers and philosophers that they always emphasize deep work, and it had to be done from like 5 o'clock in the morning till midday. And like Alex Hormozy's content just hits you in the face every time. It's like, look at this fucking rip psychopath. Like, I've got to be more like him. You know what I mean? And it's like, no, mate, no one's got 3 hours. So here's something Jason learned from when he, so he's actually a very advanced martial artist and spent time with the Shaolin monks in China. And he's like, I used to train with these guys, right? Like literally black belt. And they get up in the morning, they literally like stretch their neck, you know, stretch their arms and just, poof, they just fight straight off the bat. He's like, that is the ability to do things with no warm up. And you'll get all of these athletes that are like, you know, do a 4 hour warm up and then do their game. It's like, you don't need that. Like extremely advanced martial artists just drop in straight away. So if you've got 10 fucking minutes, you've got 10 fucking minutes and you just get shit done. So I will try not to get distracted when I get time at my, you know, computer or whatever, which is incredibly hard to do. And I'll just bash out tasks that I've got stored up. And you just get much more efficient with your time.
Yeah, I assume that. Because right now I do have that 3 hours of deep work time that I can get.
Nice.
I mean, I even get frustrated. Like if Laura's like talking to someone over there, I'm like, ah, I gotta focus. But I'm assuming that's just all gonna go to shit. So,
well, shout out to my friend Jaden, who I was training with the last 6 months, who was helping him out as a PT. And his daughter Cherry will be probably 4 or 5 months old now. He was so smug for like the first 3 months, his first baby. She just was a dream sleeper. And basically life didn't change much for him. And at like month 4, I just got a message earlier today. It's like, not much sleep at the moment. So it does evolve. Okay. You just roll with it, mate. You guys will be awesome parents. It's fantastic to see, as I mentioned before, just like meeting people in person and seeing their progress over time. Well, Paul, listen, I really appreciate your time and thanks for reaching out and coming on the podcast. It will be no surprise to me your answer to this, but if people want to reach out and get in touch, what's the best way for them to do that?
Primal.net/Paul. Go ahead.
Done.
Give me in the DMs. I'll see it.
Awesome.
Let me know. Paul, thanks so much.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Yeah, thank you.